Hello, and welcome to recording number two of Gary Gygax's Artifact of Evil. Today is July 27th, 2021. All right. Yesterday, we finished off chapter one, which ends just in the as the battle of the siege is taking a different turn, and we found out that the castle was a stronghold in the Pomarge of the Scarlet Brotherhood. So I'm going to start today with chapter 2, page 19 in the first paragraph. Gord came suddenly upon the scarlet-robed figure as it bent and slit the throat of a helplessly paralyzed soldier. The man had now killed five of his comrades, two near the middle of the hall and three more here before him. Without hesitation, Gord sprang into attack, his sword darting into extended position, and his dagger held ready for a follow-up thrust. His blade took the man under the arm, and the fellow gasped in surprise and pain as the short sword struck home. The young thief almost immediately brought his long dagger into play, hooking it viciously around, so that it too struck deep into the murderer's unsuspecting back. The scarlet robes were suddenly awash with a stain of darker red as the priest of evil fell to the floor, his life blood mingling with the coagulating pools spilled by his victims. Gord paused only a moment to wipe his two weapons clean, noting as he did so that the enemy priest had not gotten away without first taking wounds from the men he had so callously killed. Several shallow gashes and a protruding bolt showed that the crossbowmen had taken their toll before falling. Satisfied, the grim-faced young adventurer turned and saw other enemies still within the massive keep. So I'm assuming here, a break, first off, break right here. I'm assuming here that, this is the commander, the cleric in command. Here he is being able to, being slain. But, it does show that the crossbow bolts already wounded him. And Gord is striking him both with the short sword and the long-toothed dagger in the back. I was assuming that this is the commander who's struck down right here. We're finally seeing Gord pop up. And again, it is, an action scene. So, in a sense, I really enjoyed the first chapter as the action and the little bit of lore. And we did learn some information about the Scarlet Brotherhood, which was, then eventually passed down into some of the second edition material. And, much more greatly expanded upon. But the first was a wonderful bit of action, but it, other than providing some information about this castle in the Pomarge, it really doesn't give us a tremendous amount of lore, but a very enjoyable bit of action and some descriptions on how Gygax saw, siege going on. So here, Gord has popped up. We see that, the paralyzation spell was particularly effective against these soldiers. But again, soldiers are normally pretty low level, unless it mentions a champion, an officer, or even a corporal or a sergeant, but especially an officer or a champion. A high-level cleric is going to be, much more effective when he's fighting low-level soldiers who probably don't have the best armor class. And here they are vulnerable to his magic right here. So there's not much more, but here, Gord is, you know, he doesn't even seem to realize how important this action is, killing the overall commander, and now he is going on. Yeah, and you know, he's doing this narrative where, you know, he opens up where you don't know what to expect in the middle of action. And that's a, you know, structure in writing, as well as what they took up and ended doing in the movies and on radio shows and such. So I just want to say, you know, it was mentioned here that it is Guy Gax's birthday today. So, you know, appropriate place to put, say, happy birthday. You know, just a little sad to, you know, think about him being gone and all the years when a lot of creative material could have come out. And I really wish there had been much, much more done. Rather than running a business, I wish there had been much more of Gord books and of other books, perhaps, because, you know, he could have gone back and written material that wasn't about Gord. So we could be seeing, you know, whole bunches of Greyhawk material covering any time in the past and different adventures and such. All right. I am going to restart, and it is page 19, paragraph 3. Their column had come into the place through the deserted warren of passages, cells, and chambers that lay beneath the stronghold. Strandkeep Castle, the place was called. One of the scores of fortresses that littered the Pomarch, Strandkeep was also one of the strongest, and it stood as a thorn between the Principality of Uluk to the west and the humanoid-infested territory that lay eastward. It was also the key to any invasion of the Pomarch. Dwarven miners had labored for weeks digging the tunnel that drove toward the castle, while the encircling army sought to destroy the place by more obvious means. Strandkeep was well garrisoned and stocked with ample supplies, and had a surprising force of magic users and clerics within. Men, machines of war, and even magic had not managed to seriously threaten Strandkeep during almost 2 months of siege. Word came that increasing numbers of humanoids, both orcs and hobgoblins, were gathering in the Drakenskrob Hills to the north and to the east. Relief must soon come, as the encircling army could not withstand the attack of a horde of such creatures while maintaining its stranglehold on the fortress. All right, break. So, we learn that this is Strandkeep Castle. But also, we get a little dose of lore here. We also learned that, you know, there are scores of small fortresses littering the Pomarch. We don't know anything about them, per se. We don't know if they're if they are all Scarlet Brotherhood, or whether they're old castles that have been taken over by humanoids at this point. But we do know that this one right here is obviously one of the strongest. And how, Gygax is mentioning here how well garrisoned and stocked it was, surprising force of magic users and clerics. And also that, that this siege has been going on for 2 months, and the dwarven miners have been coming in and, you know, working their way toward the underground passages and such. So, you know, here Gord is part of the group that's coming in up from the underground where the force of trolls and ogres had been kept. And now that they've mostly been destroyed, his group was able to make it through. I'm not quite sure why he was on his own, or how those crossbowmen had ventured ahead enough to, you know, be attacked before, to attack before Gord was able to. All right, and Chris has put up a map of the Pomarge, and I am not quite sure, because it's kind of, I see it now, the Strandkeep Castle, right on a waterway and on a major road. You know, I'm not sure about the placement, because these various provinces and such here, I'm not sure, because it's supposed to be at the point where it is an invasion route, I'm not, you know, is that supposed to be, looks like it's smack dab in the middle of the Pomarge, and it seems to me from what's being said here that it sounds more like something that would be, you know, closer to the border. But there's nothing really. It is some way south and west of the Drachenscrob Hills. So, you know, I guess on this map, they must be,
it is west.
All right, it is west of the Drachenscrob.
Yeah, I guess it might be a little south. I'll try to pull one up with it. Just gets so small when I zoom out.
There's Drachenscrobs, but it is a bit south, I think. And according to this, there's Suderham, it should be, according to this, that the humanoids gathering in the hills are to the north and the east, so it should be southwest, you know, it's hard to tell right here. I'm not sure. It really doesn't appear to be like a real invasion route. Okay.
It's pretty.
I am.
Pretty central.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
pretty central.
Yeah. I'm not sure if it. From this description, I would say that seems a bit out of place. But then it you know, it doesn't say how far away it is from the Drachenscrobs either. So. You know, it's a little hard to
see. The whole concept of hexes is kind of lost with this.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's not something that's on the Darlene map. I'm not sure where this particular, you know, placement is coming from. So, all right. I'm going to restart. It is page 20, paragraph 3. All right, at the same time this bad news became known, the chief of the sappers reported to the assembled commanders of the besieging army that his miners were in position to enter the dungeons of Strandkeep Castle. Intelligence had alerted them. I'm sorry, my screen went off there. Intelligence had alerted them that these catacombs were used to house a large contingent of trolls, ogres, and the like, kept by the castle's master as a surprise weapon against attackers, and recently stocked full because of the advancing enemy. The time since had certainly caused supplies of food for these creatures to run low, and cannibalism must begin soon, if the trolls and gnolls weren't released against their human adversaries outside Strand Keep. To give the evil master of the castle reason to do this, the great attack was staged. The escalade involved only about 1,000 actual troops, plus some powerful illusions worked by the demon crafters of the attacking force. Spellbinders schooled in this special art. A reaction came as expected. The dungeons were emptied of their evil spawn, and the dwarven miners set to work to finish their labors. Within an hour, their task was completed, and a force of men and dwarves poured down and through the long, low tunnel, spreading out under the works of the castle above, and proceeded to clear the subterranean complex of all resistance. A special contingent accompanied these soldiers, and Gord was part of that smaller group. Stout dwarf and man-at-arms could face their ilk, human or humanoid, with relative equality. The champions of the castle, the clerics, fighters, magic users, and who knew what else, were a far different matter. Defeating such persons as well as monstrous guardians, possibly held in reserve too, would require heroes and those able to counter works of power. With the column of attackers came such persons, both dwarven and human. Gord, of course, was with them. His training in silence and stealth was paramount, not to mention his skill with weapons. He led a small band of dwarves and men, black-clad and fast-moving. With them came a pair of spell workers, too. While the lower area was cleared, this handful of warriors went above and secured the egress from the dungeons. Alright, break. So, I'm breaking right here. And, you know, I find this is a good presentation of, you know, the mine work was always part of the siege of a castle. Either they would dig tunnels and undermine the main walls, or bring them down and cause a collapse of an outer wall, which was one of the reasons why they usually had moats. Now, the dwarves had to have come at a very low level and up, because there is a moat that they talk of around the outside of the circular castle. All right.
I think the elder brother said they followed through some path, right? That he sent some group out, and then I don't know whether they were successful or not, but they may have followed them in through whatever way that they got in, and they went into the complex below the keep.
Yeah. And, you know, the underground beneath the keep is the dungeon is supposed to be extensive. And you can imagine there's supposed to be 100 ogres and trolls plus a larger contingent of gnolls down there. So the only thing I'm curious about, though, is that it seems to me the gnolls, being longbow archers, you know, 7 feet tall and supposedly, you know, adept at the longbow, that they would have been better holding sections of the wall than coming out on the ground. Although they're also monstrous creatures and much more powerful than, like the average, I'd say the average soldier isn't equal to a gnoll. All the gnolls aren't, you know, like terrifically powerful. And there's a comment here. I'm sorry.
No, I think they wanted to get rid of the humanoids, though, right? Isn't that one of the reasons that they sent them out and then barred the gates when they tried to come back?
Well, it's saying here that their supplies were low, and that they were going to, in this second chapter here, where they're talking about having to resort to cannibalism, for the gnolls and the trolls, although I'd imagine, too, feeding the ogres would also be, very, very consuming of supplies. So, if they're at that point after a 2-month siege, it's kind of like use it or lose it with these troops. If they're going to start getting them weak or immediately start feeding them other troops, that's going to be very, very rough there. And it presages the end of the usefulness of those troops or the loss of the regular guards guarding the walls. So, they talk about giving them, a reason to do this. but really, you know, they were being pressured from the inside. And now there's a comment here about the sketch map of Strand Keep. And yes, you can tell by, like, the sketch map of the city of Greyhawk that it might be a very bare-bones sketch of Strand Keep. I'd love to have seen exactly what was, you know, what the idea was, the scale and such. That would, I think, be... It would be wonderful to get to see that. And with the various pictures that are used, it's a real shame that there wasn't some more cartography provided. It would have been lovely to see Stoink, you know, Radagast City, Lukesh. And, you know, yeah, he had, this is a very detailed description about the walls and various things and the tower, and you know, there must have been some kind of sketch in mind here.
It seems like a very defensible castle.
Yes, and now it is. You know, it has a lot going for it. The mining going in is definitely, you know, it's got an outer moat. It's got you know, very sturdy structure. And, you know, it is said to be the strongest of the many, the scores of castles that are in the Pomarge. So, yes, you know, it is a very powerful little force, right? A very powerful castle right here.
We have an idea who built those castles?
Not yet. I mean, I'm assuming that they're a leftover before the humanoids conquered. Although it's possible that some are controlled by evil humans, you know, but they could just mostly be castles that are under the control of humanoids, or else have, you know, more Scarlet Brotherhood troops or mercenary troops that are holding them. Now, I it's interesting to note in the way that this is spelled out, for the AD&D mechanics, that they, you know, Gygax is taking into account that there will be various levels, skill levels of defenders. So the lower level defenders are going to face dwarves and man-at-arms, but they are bringing in Gord and other champions, clerics, fighters, magic users, who are, you know, a special group to come in and face their like among the officers and clerics and hierarchy of the Scarlet Brotherhood, or else more powerful creatures like trolls and ogres. And by this time, Gord is, you know, he is, I'm supposed to be over eighth level, so he, you know, he is capable of taking on such things. And, you know, as he just killed the commander, who would be the highest level cleric, who was wounded but doesn't sound terribly, but Gord does score a surprise backstab using that short sword and the you know, the long tooth dagger again. You know, he's a thief acrobat, so that is definitely one of his strongest attacks, is going to be that backstab. And when you think about all the bonuses between magic weapons and his own skill bonuses, that really, you know, even without doing a critical or anything, it, you know, it does show that the partially wounded cleric really wasn't up to, you know, withstanding that kind of an attack. All right.
One more thing.
Sure.
Is this the first time we've seen dwarves? Because I don't know if we saw many in Saga of Hold City.
Oh, we didn't see many. I mean, there was the dwarf who sold the long-tooth dagger to Gordon, right? Lukesh. Now I'm trying to think, were there any else? We saw hobbits back at the very beginning, or halflings. We saw some half-orcs, but I don't think we've had encounters with gnomes, but I don't think, other than the
dwarf dealing with the magic weapons. I think that might have been, there might have been another dwarf unnamed in Lukesh who directed him to that dwarf. I believe that dwarf was Hengst or Hangle or something.
Yeah, I think it's Hangle.
Yeah, and we did not see them. We didn't see them in Radagast City. We didn't see them in Stoink. So I don't think we've really run across any other dwarves at this point. So now we're seeing them in force as dwarf miners and dwarf fighters, but really unnamed and undetailed. All right. I'm going to restart. It is page 21, paragraph 3. Once this was accomplished, reinforcements followed, and those troops were soon issuing from below and securing the ground floor of the great castle's massive keep. Meanwhile, Gord and his associates, along with others of the special force, began seeking their skillful counterparts within the castle. Thus Gord had come upon the wicked commander of the fortress, lost in his butchery, attacked and slain him. Now he sought more such enemies, but did so with caution, however, for he knew that spell or sword could lay him low, despite his own ability. Fighting had progressed to the upper floors. A great melee still raged on the lower story, where the garrison fought to prevent the attackers from exiting the keep. Gord knew that the ring of besiegers had by now closed upon the entire circumference of Strandkeep Castle, forcing the defenders to make a choice. There were many soldiers in such a fortress, but not nearly enough to both protect the wall and contain the invaders already within the central structure of the stronghold. Soon, very soon, the place must fall. Gord bounded up the wide main staircase. Bodies were everywhere, most of them dead defenders and their red surcoats, but not a few men and dwarves in other garb also. The second floor seemed to have been cleared, and Gord noted that the archers and crossbow-armed dwarves were sniping from embrasures at the defenders below. He ran down a long hallway that led toward the tower at the core of the complex. Ahead, several of the invading men-at-arms were struggling with a makeshift battering ram, trying to beat down the door leading to the tower. A gray-robed magician who had just joined the men motioned them inside. The bronze wood door would yield easily to her. She cast her Deomer, and the portal flew open, its bar magically lifted and dropped away. The spellcaster moved back from the suddenly opened door, quickly, but not quickly enough. A spear hurled from within the tower took her full in the shoulder. Its possessor must have lain in wait for the opportunity to occur, and she had no chance to avoid the weapon. As the wounded magician reeled and fell, Gord leaped and rolled into the area beyond the portal. Another spear came at him as he did so, but his acrobatics foiled the attack, and the weapon clanged on the stone flags near him, skittering across the floor. He saw that its head was coated with a greenish paste, poison. These were foul opponents indeed. Gord recovered and crouched, sword and dagger on guard. Back to the wall. Before him were a pair of tall, crimson and black garbed men. They appeared to be twins, almost, each with curly hair, pale, ice-blue eyes, and thin-featured, arrogant faces that suited their slender build and confident carriage. The men-at-arms came rushing into the chamber, and one of these tall men moved gracefully to prevent the soldiers from passing him. Gord had time only to see the fellow sneer as he batted two speeding quarrels away with his bare hands, just as the missiles streaked toward his chest. Then the other of the pair came at Gord. Break. All right. So here we are with Scarlet Brotherhood monks. Chris has posted a little bit about the abilities of Gord's backstab here. This striking a blow from behind, the damage is twice normal for the weapon. And if you remember, his, I believe it's the dagger that does full damage all the time. And so this would be, you know, the bonuses, double full damage, or no, maybe quadruple.
If he's eighth level, it's triple damage.
Okay. I think he was eighth at the end of the book. I'm not sure. He may actually, he was said to be high level. So he may actually be ninth level. And that's four times damage. Mm-hmm. So that is a very deadly attack. And the hit probability is plus four. So, you know, that's, boy, that is a very powerful attack. You know, it's mentioned here that it's a surprise that the lower level of goblinoids wasn't part of either reinforcement, the orcs and hobgoblins to come. And we have a question about Bronzewood. And from what it's a magical, you know, it's a magical tree unique, or at this point unique to the Greyhawk campaign, and not something that is just a named tree from our Earth. There's a scene in the saga book where that Longtooth is able to pierce the Bronzewood tree very easily, and then I believe it was mentioned that the gates in Stoink were Bronzewood as well.
But it was when the bandit leader threw it at Gord when they were fighting the guys from the Pale.
Yes, and it stuck, and he was glad that the bandit leader didn't see how powerful that dagger was. All right, so, you know, so right here we have there's a little information. You know, all through this, we've been giving, been told a little about the colors that they're wearing, which are probably uniform for the levels of the clerics and the abilities. I believe that the commander was gold and red. And then we hear that these two monks are red and black. And here we're introduced to the classic AD&D monk, you know, knocking quarrels out of the air before they touch him. I think that is a certain level you're able to do that. So, you know, we can know that they're not, they have to be above, at that level or above. You know, here, you know, obviously these two are the ones who, one of them able to throw the spear. And the portal to this area was Bronzewood. So again, you know, showing how important the area was and the ability of it being, how much resistance it was able to take. The spell that the magic user used was probably a knock spell, I'm thinking.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, and you know it. I think that's the description of what the knock would be able to do. But its bar magically lifted and dropped away. All right. So you know these are evil monks. They're fighting barehanded. They're using some weapons like this with poison on them. You know, so these are two of the higher level champion kind of fighters on the side of the Scarlet Brotherhood. All right, I'm going to restart. It is page 22, and Chris has put up the knock spell here in the text channel. And it will open a stuck or held or wizard locked door. It will also open barred or otherwise locked door. Causes secret doors to open. So yes, You know, that is it, one of its functions is to, you know, take care of any barred doors. All right. Now let's see. I'm going to restart right here. It is page 22 and the second paragraph from the end. The speed of his attack was incredible. Gord had time only to attempt to fend off the spinning, bare-handed foe. Gord thought himself successful as the fellow moved away from his threatening blade, but then Gord was struck by a kick that drove him against the stone wall and nearly left him breathless. Gord responded with a fast backhand cut with his short sword, but the man's leg was already elsewhere, and the counterstroke cut only air. "Not fast enough, thief," the crimson-robed opponent said, posturing strangely before Gord. "I shall give you a lesson in true fighting skills before I kill you. Watch now." With this, the man's hands began to flutter. His arms moved sinuously, and his feet stepped in a complex dance-like movement. Gord, fortunately for him, was too battle-wise to be fooled by such motions. He watched his opponent's eyes when he could. The fellow actually turned his back or looked away too often for Gord to be able to lock his gaze on that of his adversary. Something in those eyes, or tension displayed in neck or body, alerted Gord, and he was ready when the exotic posturing suddenly turned into a furious assault. Gord was struck again, this time by an iron-hard hand and a powerful kick, but in return he dealt the fellow a long gash with his sword and a deep wound with his dagger. "Perhaps you might gain instruction in swordplay," Gord mocked, despite a bleeding mouth, blades moving slowly before him in his own complex rhythm of fighting. You know, here where Gygax is showing how, you know, you can express the various monk-like combats, basically the kind of thing you'd see in any, you know, like kung fu film, you know, doing, you know, some very, you know, Eastern-style fighting, I'd say. That is being talked about. You know, we have Gord here. Still, now Gord is taking some blows from this. So this opponent, Gord has pretty good armor class, mainly because of his, you know, his dexterity, which is going to be, it's 18, so I believe it, you know, gives him a plus 4. You know, to his armor class there, or, you know, it's going to give him a 4 bonus and lower his armor class.
He's got that plus 1 elven chain, too.
Yeah, so that should be an armor class 4, and with his dexterity, it should bring it down to 0. Now, as the game goes, the higher level you are, you know, that becomes less, you know, you keep going down into the negatives, but, that is a pretty good armor class, but this fighter seems very skilled.
Indeed, I think it's his first hand-to-hand combat with monks.
And it's also showing you the hit point business. Now, monks, although they're good fighters and have special bonuses and abilities, I believe they are, you know, they fight as thieves. So so they're going to be kind of equal to Gord in their, you know, their striking ability, depending on level. All right, I'm going to restart. It is paragraph 3. Page 23. The pale features of the robed man's face went nearly white at this. "Save your breath, you inferior mongrel," he snarled. "I don't wish you to be too winded to scream when I give you a painful death." It is you who keep on squeaking, white rat. Do you bite too?" Gord egged the man on, for this contest must be finished soon. The soldiers were not faring well against his near twin. Two were down and still. and a third dropped even as Gord spoke. Their lone opponent seemed unhurt. Gord knew that he would never be able to defeat both of these formidable, weaponless fighters, so he had to finish the one before him quickly. Amazingly, the wounds he had given this man had ceased much of their bleeding, almost as if he were a troll. The bastard had used the opportunity of insult exchange to somehow partially heal himself, Gord realized. The process required some concentration, though, and Gord acted on the assumption that his foe was distracted. His assumption proved true, and despite the fellow's superior speed, Gord was successful in his onslaught, scoring another pair of wounds and avoiding the flurry of hands and feet that countered his attack. Break. Now, you know, Gord is 18 dexterity. So it's interesting that the monk is being described as, you know, quicker, you know, right here. All right. And so, you know, I'm not sure if that is simply a commentary on the combat style, or whether this monk's speed isn't really tied at to dexterity. And here, Chris has posted a little from the AD&D Player's Handbook that at 7th level, the monk gains the ability to heal damage on his or her body. So here we do show what Gord is talking about. Again, Gygax using the rule system. And we know then that this monk is at least 7th level, if not higher. So a pretty powerful character. All right. I am going to restart here. It is page 23, the final paragraph. A lightning-like series of exchanges followed, with slight pauses between series, where Gord taunted and jibed, and his adversary made strange noises and grimaces. Both men were hurt, Gord battered and bruised, and the blonde, weaponless opponent slashed and stabbed. Who was getting the better of it, Gord could not guess, for he had never faced such an opponent before. The fighting between men-at-arms and the pale, lean twin to Gord's foeman had developed to a contest between two surviving soldiers and their now cautious opponent. Out of the corner of his eye, Gord saw that this unarmed fighter was also showing signs of having been hurt. Evidently, the two survivors of the group were more skilled than their comrades had been. They tried to work to either flank of the tall, red-clad enemy as he moved and struck, keeping them at bay. Gord must have seemed not to have been alert as he quickly appraised what was happening to his fellows, for the blue-eyed foeman launched an incautious rush that not only missed its mark, but enabled Gord to deliver a vicious set of counterattacks. Two of the blows were merely scratches, but the other pair were serious strokes that caused much harm. Seconds later, the fighter struck Gord a buffet that nearly knocked him unconscious, but missed with his follow-up attack, and again took painful wounds in return. After another such exchange, the man sought to escape the contest, for he must have sensed that it could now end but one way. But as he flipped backward and began his dash for safety, Gord launched his long dagger squarely at his back. True to his aim, the sharp point and steely shank bit deep. The legs still sought to carry the enemy's body forward, even as the trunk collapsed and went sprawling to the floor. Without bothering to find out if the man was actually dead or simply wounded and stunned, Gord wheeled to his right. Only one hard-pressed soldier still faced the other red-clothed member of the castle's evil garrison. Both were caught up in their own life-and-death struggle, enabling Gord to get a short sword thrust home before the foe realized that he was again beset by more than one adversary. The sting of the wound Gord inflicted seemed to cause the man to leap sidewise. Actually, this was a tactic to get himself clear of the area from which the attack came and give himself time to assess the new situation. The soldier, however, was ready for the ploy, and his short-hafted axe flew from his hand to strike the fellow even as he took the new position. Caught unawares, the enemy warrior was unable to dodge or deflect the tumbling axe, and its blade caught him on his arm. As the man sought to pull free the buried bit, Gord somersaulted into him and bowled the man over, then began repeatedly pummeling with the hilt of his sword and stabbing with the short-bladed knife he had drawn from his boot. "Leave off, mate. The bugger's dead," the panting man-at-arms said softly. Gord ceased his flurry, realizing that the soldier was right. "What about the other one?" the fighter asked. "He get away." A glance showed Gord that the body of his first foe was no longer where it had fallen, but a bloody trail showed where the man had gone. The dagger was nowhere in sight. Gord's prize poniard was gone, too. "After the dog, man," ordered Gord. "We must find him before he hides away in some nook or cranny of this warren and escapes." "Yes, sir," the soldier snapped in reply without thinking. This man in black leather was obviously a leader, and the sergeant obeyed him without question. The soldier set off immediately, first trotting to where the train of darkening blood began, and then slowing as he followed it through a columned archway leading from the hall. Gord was at his heels. Break. So, this is a sergeant, and like I was saying, you know, the lowest level soldier isn't very high, like, from 0, 1, or maybe 2. Corporals are, I believe, normally like 2 or 3. And sergeants, maybe 4, and with an experienced older sergeant, maybe even up to 5. And having survived, this combat with the higher level monk, it seems to me he'd probably have to be about 5th level. So here we have, you know, again, and the other thing is here, Gord, and a little before when he first went into the room, he's showing his acrobatic skill and using it to increase his avoidance of, like, first the spear, and then here using it as a quick attack to smash into this other monk. All right, I'm going to restart. It's page 25 in the final paragraph. The telltale stains led to an arras. The hanging curtain of embroidered wool hid a narrow passage beyond. The soldier again broke into a lope, moving several paces ahead of Gord. But he had taken no more than a few steps before a shout of pain came from between his clenched teeth. He raised his left foot, grabbing for the injured member. But as he did so, I'm really losing my place today. He groaned and crashed to the stone-flagged floor, dead. Gord halted instantly, assessing what had happened. By careful scrutiny, he discerned small objects littering the dim passageway floor. Poison caltrops. The wounded man must have strewn them behind, knowing that pursuers would be unlikely to see them until too late. Gord leapt over the area where the small, sharp-pronged things were scattered. He bounded up a narrow spiral stairway, moving fast but keeping track of the splashes of red. The trail did not continue up past a small landing. Without hesitation, Gord began a careful examination of the wall to his right. There were traces of blood near it, and he assumed that a hidden door was to be found here. Within a minute, he had indeed located a secret stone panel. it was not difficult to release its catch and open it. The narrow corridor beyond was dark, unlighted save for the faint illumination from the stairs, where an embrasure somewhere above let sunlight filter down. No matter, Gord's vision was not dependent on such light, for he held his Diomed sword, which magically empowered his eyes to see the parts of the spectrum above and below the human norm. Ducking his head, Gord dived into the passageway. His body rolled into a ball that tumbled ahead in a series of fast rolls. The tall blonde man he had been tracking waited within the corridor, holding a crossbow aimed at the rectangle of light revealed by the opening of the secret door. All right, breaks. All right, here we have something that I'm wondering about, because back when they were fighting the Catablone demon and Chert was unable to see, I'm wondering what, if any, light source there was either above or below the human spectrum in the sealed off cavern. You know, it seems to me that there had to be something. I believe what, you know, they're talking about is infravision. And I don't think infravision would work in complete darkness. So, you know, I thought that the human and that the enchanted short sword would actually be, you know, doing a magical kind of true sight rather than just allowing infravision as well. And I thought that was where Gord was getting his ability to see in utter darkness. So I don't know if that was always, or maybe I've got, you know, it just doesn't seem to fit the description of being able to see in higher or lower spectrum. Or perhaps it can do even more, though. Because, you know, as it's been pointed out many a time, Gord is an unreliable narrator. He sees things from his point of view, and if he is mistaken, then you get erroneous accounts that, you know, may or may not be the case. All right. I'm going to restart. It is page 26, the third paragraph. The thick bolt buzzed harmlessly over Gord's compact rush, clattering into the stairwell beyond. As it did so, Gord sprang to his feet and attacked the wounded man before he could reload the weapon. The red-gowned foe had thought Gord unable to see him lying in ambush in the darkness, and expected to slay Gord thus. With a terrible curse, the man hurled the useless crossbow in Gord's general direction, turned, and fled groaning down the black corridor. He managed to pull open a small wooden door at its end, but that was all. Gord struck his back with his shoulder, a slamming blow that drove the wounded man into the room beyond and sent him sprawling to the floor, face down. All right, break. So, Gygax is here showing, several things. That it's either something related to Gord's acrobatic ability, or Gygax is using unarmed combat. First, definitely with the acrobatics of slamming the other slain monk, but here, this is definitely some kind of, unweaponed attack by, you know, slamming into the monk and sending him to the floor. All right. I am going to restart. And it is page 26 and paragraph 4. Quarter, the fallen man managed to cry through his bloody lips. Spare me and I'll give you a king's ransom. Gord pressed his sword point firmly against the prone man's back. If you move other than to speak, I'll kill you, as I would a spider. The hard finality of Gord's voice made the man freeze motionless. Tell me of your offer, quickly. Do you pledge you'll spare me if I do so? Poisoner, foul assassin, lurker in ambush, you dare plead with me thus? Prepare your spirit for the foul lower planes where demons or devils await the gleeful anticipation. No, wait. I will show you the treasure, wealth, and more. There are plans that your superiors will find most interesting, and you will gain promotion and favor. Surely for such you will not slay me. I will be your willing slave. Just give me my life. Gord was disgusted by the man's begging. At his suggestion of intrigue and scheming on Gord's part, and his willing acquiescence to bondage for life. Silence, speak again before I tell you, and I will sever your spine, if you have one. Answer truthfully and exactly. Where is this hoard you yammer of kept? Here in this very room, the wounded foeman said without inflection, this is the secret chamber of the elder brother. Who is this elder brother? R, the commander of this castle. Gord leaned gently on his sword, making the man gasp and squirm slightly. You said R. What is R, and what profession does this elder brother have other than being Castilian? Our order holds this fortress, and elder brother is a high priest of Tharizdun, thus high within our order. At this pause, Gord gave another easy prod, and the prone man hastily added, the order is called the Scarlet Brotherhood. Gord had heard vague stories about the Scarlet Brotherhood, and he mentally filed the information away for later contemplation. Tell me where the treasure is kept, he barked. There is a hidden place, and in Vemin Darts. Allow me to light candles, and I will show you. Although we needed no such illumination, Gord permitted the wounded man to rise. The man fumbled in his belt and drew forth a tinderbox. Gord watched carefully, but the fellow appeared to have no thought of trickery or further resistance. He had accepted the situation, and now sought only to obey. Puffing the sparks into a tiny flame, the prisoner took a small taper and caught its wick of fire. In a moment a great candelabrum shed the light of three massive candles over the small apartment. Gord could see another secret door, probably leading to a chamber beyond in which the so-called elder brother dwelled. The room he was in had little in it besides the candle stand, a small desk and chair, and a wooden chest of great size. Here, the wounded prisoner said, pointing to a cabinet that Gord had overlooked, I must open this with care, pressing hard on the side panel, else the darts will be loosed upon me when the door is swung outward. Moving quickly to avoid any possible discharge of such missiles, Gord observed, as the fellow opened the cupboard, short sword aimed a thrust home at the slightest sign of trickery. The space revealed had several shelves. Upon these boards rested a variety of items. Scrolls, loose parchment, sheets, an array of small containers, and several leather bags. Gold, the fellow said with an obsequious smile, as he picked up a heavy bag. Its contents shifted and clinked. Platinum pieces, he said, patting another. And this one holds electrum. All these on the lower shelf, too. The rest, Gord demanded. The flat box here holds a store of precious stones used for bribery. The pots and jars are those things common to priestly powers, the stuff for spell working. The scrolls are sacred writings of Tharizdun. The other papers are orders and plans, the important documents I told you of, which will bring you much favor with your masters when you hand them the intelligence. Without comment, Gord proceeded to take the gems and platinum. This treasure was his by right of conquest and discovery. The remaining wealth he left for the others of his allies. He ordered his captive to carry the scrolls and loose sheets of parchment, and the two returned the way they had come. It was time for Gord to find his friend Geller and report this unsuspected success. Ending for the night, it's page 28 and the end of chapter 2. So, Here is very revealing information that this head cleric is a priest of Tharaston. And because of that, he's high in the order of the Scarlet Brotherhood. But it doesn't mean that Tharaston is their only deity that they worship. It seems to imply that, there is a very strong cult or worship of Tharaston among the Scarlet Brotherhood, but not like completely the only worship that they follow. So there's a lot here of going into some interesting lore about Tharaston and the Scarlet Brotherhood. We also get, the story progresses, we see things about Gord's skill, and finally, we see advance in plot, whether there might be plans and information that Gord is going to hand off to Geller, who obviously is one of the leaders of this siege.
It's good information and a strong link between at least that priest and this outpost of the Brotherhood between them and Tharaston.
Yes, I'd imagine that this, at least some of the other clerics have to be Tharaston worshippers, and if not all of them. I mean, it doesn't sound to me as if this monk may not be a follower of Tharaston. And, I suspect, but again, we know so little about the Scarlet Brotherhood that this is a very interesting bit of revelation here that Gygax has given us. He's adding some, details. Now, later on, we get a whole book in second edition about the Brotherhood, but I don't know. It just, I am blatantly biased of Gygax's work. I like it a great deal, but I really did not care for the Scarlet Brotherhood source book or the Slaver's source book that came out much later.
Yeah, I like seeing the solid link here from Gary, though.
Yes. And, it's just, I think if you grew up in the Gygax era and you started Greyhawk with the Folio or the 83 set, and, some people didn't even know those. They just started with From the Ashes or even from the Player's Guide or The Adventure Begins. So, there's a much different outlook if there's somebody like me who started with the Folio.
Yeah, me too. That was my introduction to Greyhawk.
Yeah, and that it makes me very Gygaxian, whereas, and I like the bare bones and the do-it-yourself. So when they switched that to the overly, what I felt was overly detailed From the Ashes by Sargent, it did not appeal to me. Whereas, this book is done in the exact nature of what you'd expect. There's some detailing, but it's mostly little bits and pieces that you expand upon yourself. And so I really like that. All right.
Good read, thanks.
Oh, you're welcome. It's 7:03. I'm going to summon up Craig here and end it for today.
Good night.
Good night. Oops, that didn't work. Sorry, I've got a little thing going on here.